Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever, and this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars, new season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Welcome in to the Odds and Audibles podcast, Mailbag Edition. I'm Matt Prehm, Eric Scopel on the show as always. And today, Eric sent out the prompt. We've got a bunch of questions following Oregon's spring game and the ramifications that come from it from a player personnel standpoint, from a depth standpoint, from a star standpoint, and even from a recruiting standpoint. We're going to cover it all. In this mailbag, pretty exciting and good one to boot as well.
Yeah, I'll say I went and rewatched the spring game shortly after we recorded on Saturday. So many fun things to kind of watch in detail. I posted like a 3,000-word breakdown on the message board. I was pretty into a lot of what I saw. Some, I think we'll have some pretty good explanations for some of these questions as well as we get into it. But I think this is a good time to do a mailbag. In part because I will be heading to Hawaii tomorrow, so I won't be on a podcast for a little bit, Matt. I apologize.
Tough assignment going to Hawaii. It's someone's got to do it, though.
Yeah, someone had to do it. No, it's not a work. It's very much a pleasure trip for Eric. But anyway, let's jump into this mailbag with a question from
Everett Stewart, first person, third person in the same sentence. I like it.
East Scope has to take care of himself sometimes. all right, first one here from at Cascadia. Divide overall look like most position groups are deep with a capital D. After watching the spring game, which positions need the most improvement by fall? This is a good place to start because sure. I totally agree. Having rewatched this, it's like there's NFL players at basically every position. There's two or three starting caliber players at every position almost. The Ducks are loaded this year. I think this is one of the more deep teams I've certainly covered that maybe the program has produced. I thought the spring game was really encouraging from that perspective, just like the number of guys at each spot that had kind of a player two here that popped. As to the question though, which groups need the most improvement? You know, I kind of had an explanation for why it wasn't a great day for the offensive line. Yeah. I'll go with that. Cause I think that's the easiest answer. You know, I think my explanation for it still rings true of like these guys were, you know, the starting five, and I think we kind of know what that's going to be, didn't work with each other in this game. And instead, it was a lot of kind of piecemealing different groups working together that certainly come fall won't be doing so. So, but, you know, you do come out of this, I think, saying there are some depth pieces you'd like to see improve. Like, you know, I know Dave Iuli was out, but outside of the starting interior linemen, I didn't really see any interior linemen have really strong days. Like, you know, I went back and watched it, and we'll get to some of this in the second question. But, you know, I know maybe I'll just save the name. We can talk about it then. But there was a redshirt freshman interior lineman who got absolutely worked on pass plays. And we talked about, on the recap pod without having rewatched about how, man, the defensive line looked great. And I still think that's true, but there were a couple of individuals who just weren't up to par there that you might need to rely on come fall. So I think getting more out of that group is where I would start. But I say that with the caveat being, I still feel really good about what I expect the starting five to look like. I'll be honest, it wasn't a fantastic poncho day. on rewatch, a couple of snaps that weren't great. Thought he handled himself pretty well post snap for the most part. But I definitely didn't come out of that one feeling like A plus effort there. So I'll go offensive line is the one that needs the most improvement. I'll be honest. I don't even know, aside from like Terrence Ferguson uncharacteristically dropping a couple passes and a couple of linebackers kind of getting bodied by running backs, I didn't really have another place to kind of point to.
Well, that's where I went is the offensive line. And I think that's the downfall of spring game formats and the way that Oregon did theirs is that it doesn't give a clear indication that we saw some concerns. We saw guys get beat, but we also, like, as Dan said, like we talked about it right on the podcast when we did our post game show of the defensive line was put in some advantageous positions that just won't happen in a regular game. And that's what makes it so hard to like, decipher, is it really the offensive line not playing well, or is it just some guys being put in positions that they would never be put in? And if they are, you know, Oregon has much bigger problems because a bunch of injuries or something has happened and guys are having to play way out of position or way earlier than expected. So I would think maybe defensive or offensive line. If you brought up T. Ferg being, you know, having the uncharacteristic drops, you know, but that maybe opens the door to like, hey, look, like if Ferguson doesn't have a good day, the options behind him kind of are limited because it's Patrick Herbert, Kenyon Sadiq, and then AJ Pugliano did not play. He was not dressed because he's rehabbing injuries. And look, injuries have followed him throughout his high school career as well. So this is a guy that's got history of injuries. And then, you know, Roger Salagapala is a true freshman that is a hybrid receiver, tight end type guy. So maybe there's an issue there of if T. Ferg's got to show up, because if they don't, they've got some limited options behind him in terms of number of players. I think Herbert and I think Sadiq are really good players. And I think both of them will find their way in some capacity, whether it's undrafted free agent or draft pick, will find they'll have an opportunity to make an NFL roster. I think all three of those guys, but when you only have three, you know, that opens the door where if one guy is not having a good day and it's your best guy, that maybe is a concern. But to that point, like what you opened with, this team is so loaded at every position with multiple NFL guys, basically at every position. You're really having a hard time finding something that's truly like a major concern. I think every issue that you look at, it's how do we call it? Like first world problem, where like, yeah, Oregon would love to maybe have another offensive lineman, or maybe they'd love to go out and find the transfer portal center just to make sure that Poncho is pushed and to make sure that, you know, and if he gets beat out, he gets beat out because he's got two more years of eligibility after this season. Like all of those things are what we would describe as first world program problem, where you've got your guys. Now it's, can you just make the group even better? So like, it's hard not to come away feeling pretty good about this team. And there's no real, in my opinion, like, oh my gosh, they have to get this figured out, because if they don't, they're not going to be able to contend week one to week 16 or whatever number of the games played for Oregon is. Like I truly believe, like, let's say Poncho does have some snapping issues or does have some growing pains at center. Oregon plays Idaho, Oregon State, Boise State, bye week UCLA on the road. And then I think they open with what, Illinois for the first Big Ten game?
I think it might be Michigan State.
Michigan State. Like, none of those teams should be really demanding and taxing. And they should be games where your offensive line, your individual player can grow and mature and develop through those games, where I feel like by the middle of October – things will be figured out. The concerns with center will be figured out, or the blocking concerns with the offensive line will be figured out, because either guys get better or they throw someone else in who plays well and elevates the position as he's adjusted to the new role.
On tight end, I just had one more name. He's not a scholarship player. I've always just seen Travis Brashear. He's a walk-on sophomore tight end. Physically, he's like 6'4", 275. I've always seen him walk into practice and be like, that's a big kid. Like, what can he do? There are kind of some interesting moments out there as a blocker and as a pass catcher. So, like, I don't think that's like, but if he's your fourth tight end, maybe that's not the end of the world, just because he's big, he's strong, and he can move a little bit. He had kind of a couple nice routes there. I was just kind of keying in on him because I realized midway through the second half, I didn't have a whole lot to watch for when I was watching the offense play there, because there was a lot of reserves. But maybe that's a name to just kind of know. I'll throw out for the tight end position. But let's continue this offensive line, defensive line discussion on this next question, because it ties right into it. So, question from @TimReeves44. How do you read the offensive and defensive line performances? The D-line seemed to have a big day, but they also look like an offensive line that wasn't at its best. What grade do you give the O-line? What grade do you give the D-line? #OtsNaudibles. Thank you, Tim, for using the hashtag. I'll just throw out grades kind of loosey-goosey here, because I'll be honest, I'm trying to move away. People who have been maybe subscribers or readers of our site know I, in the past, have graded every game. I'm kind of trying to move away from that. I don't really like doing it. I feel like people focus too much on this being a plus or a minus or whatnot, and then don't read the what I care about, which is the explanation for everything. So I don't know if I like – I'm not a teacher. I'm not a professor. I'm not a college football coach. I don't know if I'm the right person to be grading this. But I would say, like, broadly, I'd give the O-line like a C+ and the D-line like a B+, A-. I mean, I think if you go back and rewatch it, you know, the second green offensive possession for Dylan Gabriel, the left side of the line was just atrocious. I mean, it was really, really, really bad. And Ben Roberts deserves credits. Keon Ware Hudson deserves credit. Ashton Porter deserves credit. But I think they gave up 5 pressures on 9 plays. Just the 2 guys on the left side. That was Lipe Malala and George Silva. There was one where they just didn't communicate and let Porter run right by, like literally just right between them, and they didn't block anybody, which is, again, this is the stuff that happens in a spring game when the teams are split like this, where these guys haven't been working next to each other every day in practice. Their communication's probably not where it would need to be for a game day. Those type of things happen. But Malala in particular, again, redshirt freshman, he dealt with a ton of injuries last year. I bet he practiced like 6 days the whole fall. He had a really tough day. I mean, Ben Roberts moved him around like a blocking split a couple of times. Keon Ware Hudson had a step and kind of rip move that where he just kind of left him behind immediately. So some of this excitement from these drives comes from just a couple of inexperienced offensive linemen getting kind of worked. So, I think that explanation, having rewatched it, you look at the 5 sacks. 2 of them came on that drive with one guy just kind of getting brutalized. And then 2 more came on the other side where Dante Moore, I would say kind of like quasi coverage sacks, he holds the ball a long time. And I think in a real game where he's able to evade pressure, he might've tried harder to kind of get out of the pocket, but he just kind of stood there and let, I think it was Tatum Tuioti both times, just kind of come and tag him. So, I think in rewatching it, I know I said like C+. Like, I don't think it's maybe as bad as some fans want it to be or to feel like it was having watched. I think there's like kind of decent explanations for it, of like, you've got a couple of guys who aren't going to be playing a whole lot this fall. Like, I don't expect Malala to maybe play really at all. I don't know how much Silva's going to play. Silva's a pretty big JUCO recruit last year. Hasn't been able to find a way onto the field. And, I'll say it, like, Saturday was not encouraging. Like, I think that was a game where you probably figured, hey, we're going to put you at left tackle. Let's see what you can do. And I think he lost a lot more than he won. I think that was part of it. And then I think there's some – Oregon's got good secondary players. And I think that's going to tie into the next question. There were some situations there where the quarterbacks just didn't have anywhere to go and the defensive line got home. So, I was speaking specifically on pass downs. Offensively, the offensive line actually on rundowns played pretty darn well. And all because I was being critical of those two guys a second ago, there were two or three Big J Harris runs that were opened entirely because of Malala and Silva clearing out the A gap for him. So, you know, there were good moments on rundowns, I think, from the O-line that maybe kind of get overlooked because the pass situation stuff was so just felt so bad because it was like, oh, Dylan Gabriel has no time to pass. He's panicking. He has to throw it away or he's getting sacked. But I think collectively, I do think the D-line definitely had a better day than the O-line. I'm still not like fully hitting the panic button because like Josh Connerly was awesome in this game. Like, let's talk about that for a second. There was a lot of Josh Connerly, Jordan Burch. Like, I think that was probably the marquee matchup.
Probably a design matchup to see.
Right. And they set it up. And I think, like, I guess I could have charted it, but I would say Connerly won like 65 to 70% of those. Like, he was really good. And Burch was pretty quiet, right? Remember, we talked about that after the game. That's the explanation. He was going against Josh, who I thought played really well. Ajani was great on the right side of that green offensive line. Bedford was working with him. That whole right side didn't have any issues in pass protection. It seemed like they ran pretty well there. So the starting guys, right, we're talking about the guys who were the starters. Marcus Harper had actually a really good game, had a couple really nice blocks for the white side to set up the Jordan James touchdown was one where he just cleared his guy out. So there was definitely some positive, and the starting guys I thought popped a little bit. But again, the depth question, like I generally now I'm a little concerned about backup interior line. I don't really know who the names are there. I would have said Dave Iuli, but he's hurt right now. Nishad Strother played quite a bit. It's kind of quiet. Maybe that's a good thing. He was working next to Josh or maybe on the right side. I can't remember exactly. But, you know, I think there's probably the guys that matter the most played pretty well for the offensive line, and the guys that don't matter a lot didn't play very well, and that probably kind of steals the thunder.
I think I would grade, like if I did the grades, I think I would give the offensive line a B-, because you ran through some of the guys that played well and some of the sides that individually that matched up really well. Mm-hmm. I think it's not a B, it's not a C level grade because you give them the benefit of the doubt of, hey, there's guys being matched up against other guys that aren't going to be playing against one another in games. And you have guys out of position, guys who aren't ready for bigger roles, and that kind of led to some things happening. But it's not a B or a B plus because you did have these plays happen. You have to acknowledge sure. that. And then on the flip side, like for the offense, the defensive line, I'd probably give like an A minus because, hey, you made a bunch of really big plays. You had that goal line stand. I think it happened twice, actually. Now that I think about it.
They did. Yeah, they only held once, but they were able to force a fourth down twice.
Fourth down one, yes. And, you know, you had the goal line stands. You had the pressures, and you looked really, really good. But the reason why it's not an A or an A-plus is because of what happened offensive line is, hey, you got put in some advantageous positions, and you did what you were supposed to do. You took advantage of those, and that's what you want to see. But you also have to be understanding, like, hey, like these guys probably aren't going to be coming off the edge free like they did multiple times because they're going to be playing against a regular number one offensive line unit. And you're not going to win every single battle or 80% of the battles or 65% of the battles sure. like they did on Saturday. So that's kind of how I was. Like, I do agree in like that the interior, and this is – I don't think it really, like, we knew these were going to be the concerns going into the spring game, where it's like, what do they have after Jamari Caldwell, Ben Roberts, Keon Ware, Hudson type situation? Is Amari Washington ready for the bigger role? Is Terrence Green ready for the bigger role? Mykeel Gardner, what does Jakarigo Johnson and Aiden Breland, what do they bring to those tables? I would think we might see Oregon maybe dip into the portal for one guy, but I also don't think it's going to be one where we see them go heavy two or three guys at that position to add with Caldwell, where earlier back in December or January, whenever it was, we were talking like, hey, it might make sense for them to try and add four, five, six defensive linemen into the portal, various positions. I don't think it's going to be that drastic, but I think it's going to be They might add one because if I do think they've got a lot of young guys, but you probably need one more experienced player, and particularly up front in the interior, to aid this young group, because there aren't a lot of guys that have got experience. And, you know, like as Dan has said, like if you're old enough, you're good enough. This is going to be a year where that motto of his could really come into fruition.
And one true freshman interior lineman who we didn't talk about on Saturday because, I mean, I guess Jared kind of mentioned it a little bit because he was on the field by that time, but Matt and I, full disclosure, were walking down from the press box and missed, I don't know, the first 8 minutes of the first fourth quarter, or like, you know, a big chunk of the fourth quarter. We live missed that whole fourth down kind of goal line play for that defense. Tione Gray had a really nice sequence there. He was the one who kind of stood up that last run. And again, this is a true freshman, kind of the lowest rated recruit of this big time interior line class in 24. He is a massive human. He is challenging Terrence Green for the biggest just true freshman defensive lineman I've seen come through here. Like, these are just massive, massive bodies. And I thought it was really encouraging to see him kind of stand up a play. He and Amari Washington just totally wrecked it. And so wanted to shout those guys out because I don't think we've given them their due. So, I mean, I agree, Matt. We have a question at the end about kind of scholarship numbers and maybe some kind of acquisition questions. I could see them looking at adding an interior defensive lineman. I also think, you know, it's an interesting kind of spot here of, okay, do you want to just try to develop all of these guys you've got here? Clearly they've got some really twitchy, freaky athletes amongst those guys. Do you want to kind of rely on a bunch of freshmen and sophomore, or do you think you need to go grab another guy? And part of it's going to come down to like what's actually in the portal and what's available to them. All right. Third one. And the last one before we go to break comes from Patrick M. McHugh, who asks, anyone else underwhelmed by transfer DB performances? A little more worried than anticipated about the corner spot. Jabbar had a pretty darn good scrimmage.
Did anyone catch a pass on him? I don't think anyone did.
Nobody caught a pass on him. He broke up two. He had a really nice play on Gary Bryant on what would have been a first down, or it was a third down pass play, like third and seven. He kind of recovered from the slant route, wrapped his arm around and batted the ball down. He was green defense matched up primarily against the outside receivers. Now, unfortunately, the top two outside receivers on the white team did get hurt. So that's Trayshon, that's Jurion. So he was facing kind of some of, you know, not the starting caliber outside receivers in this game. But I thought Jabbar Muhammad, and I guess maybe underwhelmed because he didn't have a bunch of wow plays. He didn't pick off any passes. He only broke up the one or two. But I think he played really well. I guess Cam Alexander is the one where you can kind of point to because he did have the PI in the end zone on what was still an incredible one-handed kind of shoulder trapping touchdown. Would have been a touchdown catch for Evan if had he not been pushed out. I'm so frustrated because the telecast did not show the double move Jared was referencing for Evan Stewart on Cam Alexander. They were off doing who knows what and didn't show a replay that showed any of the route. They just showed him appearing on screen with the ball. So I know there were a couple of moments with Cam Alexander, and Cam was on coverage, I should say, when Stewart made that play, that double move that was like a 50-yard play to start the second to last drive with like a minute to play. So I could see maybe being concerned about Cam Alexander, but I'm not that concerned at all about corner. I mean, you know, assuming good health with all these guys, like assuming Dante Manning is good and Jaleel Florence is good and the true transfer is still healthy and you get Raj Pless back, and I'm not even gonna really decipher what might or might not happen with Daylon Austin, but you still got Dakota Fields. Sione Lalea had a couple of not awesome moments in coverage himself, I should acknowledge, but you still got a lot of guys. I'm not concerned about corner really at all.
Sometimes guys have bad games, and I will trust the 4 years Cam Alexander has at UTSA over
one at UTSA and a couple at Sam Houston State.
That's right. He's a second time transfer now. I'll trust the 3 years prior to Oregon over a 1 day showing that we saw, and he had some issues there. And the reality is, like, maybe Oregon banked on the fact that, hey, he's our third corner or maybe our fourth corner. And because Manning got hurt and because Florence didn't play, like maybe he, I don't know, got thrust into a bigger role. I'm just trying to spitball here for a second, but I'm not concerned about corner. Muhammad, we know what he can do. We know Florence is good. He just needs to get healthy. And it sounds like, you know, by middle of October, he should be fine and fully 100%. He should probably be earlier 100% in 6 weeks in the reality. And then after that, it's, well, now, you know, you've got plenty of options. Fields is, I think, is a young, talented freshman. I think Sione could turn into something for Oregon as a JUCO transfer. Roderick Pleasant didn't play in this game. How would that have impacted things a little bit? Because he was busy doing track things. So I don't have a lot of concern in the quarterback room. And on top of that, yes, Ohio State airs it out all over the place. You need to have DBs ready to go. Yes, Washington's going to air it out. Yes, USC will have guys that can throw the football. But most of the Big Ten, you're not going to have to worry about the offenses and the air attacks that you had to deal with in the Pac-12 moving to the Big Ten. It's a more traditional offensive conference with the power run game and – you know, two or three receivers plus a tight end that you don't see five wide. You don't see four wide like almost every school in the conference in the Pac-12 did. So, like, you still have to have good talent there. You still have to play well, but it's a different league. It's a different format, different scheme. And I think Oregon's situated and built really well for what they're going to face in the Big Ten this coming season.
Can I give an explanation for Cam Alexander maybe not having a good day?
Sure.
He was against Evan Stewart, who's probably going to – he's really damn good. And who, like, you look at all these way too early NFL draft predictions, and he's, like, in the first round of, like, all of them. So, I mean, some of it is, like, you know, maybe Cam's a really good player. I mean, and I we'd heard good things about him, to be clear. Like, but we just hadn't seen much until Saturday. And when he did kind of pop on screen, it was unfortunately for kind of the wrong reasons. But – maybe it's just as simple as Evan Stewart is going to make a lot of guys look kind of silly because he's a really, really high-end talent. Like, they brought him out here to be an alpha, and I'll be honest, he looked that part on Saturday. And then I had one other kind of note. I thought the slot corners played pretty well in this game, especially Nico was really, really good, I thought. And then kind of surprising me, just because it's a name we never talk about, Solomon Davis is pretty scrappy out there. I was like pretty encouraged by him.
I was high on him last year. I know. He was my pick for like a true freshman that no one's talking about is going to play. He was my pick. Watching his tape, he's super fast.
Well, and I was going to say that was the thing is he's really fast, but I was really impressed because he had like two or three pretty hard hits. Like he had one on, I'm trying to remember, it might have been Justice Lowe. It might have been who he was in coverage against, but he had one where he caught the ball and just threw him down immediately, or maybe it was Tez. I can't remember, but I actually kind of came away being like, okay, this is a guy who no one talks about. And when we do talk about him, it's probably like, is he a candidate to leave because he's not going to be good enough? I actually now think it's not that at all. And like, maybe he will be announced by the end of the day, he's leaving. But I watched it and kind of came away going like, I actually think he could help them. And maybe this year is like, you know, a depth piece in the slot who develops this year and shoot, maybe by 2025, he's kind of competing for a starting spot. So I don't know, maybe I'm completely overreacting to one sequence there or one game, but I was kind of impressed there.
I don't want to go too far down this tangent because we're getting really far away from what we were talking about.
Sure.
But it's, you brought up Solomon Davis and you brought up how maybe he's turning into a guy that's definitely not going to leave because of the skill set and the traits that he has and the development follows. I think the same can be said about Justice Lowe at receiver.
Yeah, good one. Yeah, good idea.
Like, we always talk about development. We always hear Dan Lanning talk about, like, they want this program at its core to build itself up through the traditional high school recruiting ranks, develop its current players, and then stopgap the holes that they have with the portal every year. And I think these are, you know, Lowe is probably more of the better example, but Solomon Davis is right there in this same kind of conversation that these are two guys that when they signed, lower rated players, not a lot of us expected of them from those outside the program. And now that they've gone through their full year, I guess low, it's now his complete second year. They looked like drastically different guys than when they showed up. And that speaks to the development that Oregon's position coaches have, that the program has. And both players have kind of turned themselves into situations where, let's be honest, peel the onion layers back a little bit. Like we had portal shell stories for both players in the system ready to go in case they popped, because you look at it and it's like, hey, they're not playing. Oregon needs scholarships. They're lower rated players. They would be guys that would make sense. And now I don't think it's no longer clear cut. It's not a case where I think Oregon comes out and says, you're not going to play here anymore. And if you want to play, you need to leave. Those conversations probably don't happen with these two players now.
And we'll get to a question at the end about the scholarship math. Because of Bowens and DeCambre both leaving in the last, week or so, maybe less than that, 48, 72 hours, they're not even, unless they're going to take a lot of guys, which maybe they will, but as we've talked about on this podcast, I don't know if they have a ton of needs. Maybe there's not as much urgency to move on from those players. So, I don't know. I think good call bringing up Justice Law. I kind of think of both those guys in the same way, where it's like, they came in, they were a little bit lower rated recruits. They're at positions where there's a ton of depth. There's no clear line to playing time. You just kind of go, well, they're only going to be here for a year or two and then they're going to leave. But if they're both good players and there's upside there, keep those players, let them develop a little bit. If they're patient enough and they want to stick it out, do that. And if you're Justice, it'll be interesting to see, did his performance, I thought he played really well in the spring game in particular. Is that going to open some eyes from both Oregon, but also other schools? And I hate to say it, because tampering happens everywhere. Is it possible that maybe now there's more incentive almost to enter the portal? Cause he's going to go, oh, I could go to X school and be a starter. You know, I don't know. This is kind of the weird, this portal stuff is brand new to us too. And so us trying to figure out what exactly is going to happen sometimes isn't as cut and dry as maybe it seems.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this edition of the Odds and Audibles Mailbag.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.
All right, welcome back to the Odds and Audibles podcast. Three questions in. We've got a handful left.
Yeah, we're going to go back to one of our OGs, one of our most frequent question askers. That would be at NatFod on Twitter, or X, I guess we're calling it now. It seemed like Charlie Pickard was one of only two guys playing center along with Poncho. Do we expect a walk-on to be our backup center, or is he perhaps becoming good enough for a scholarship? This is actually a good question, just because it's the nuanced stuff that maybe no one's paying attention to, but that I also was paying pretty close attention to. The green team center was Poncho. The white team center was Charlie Pickard. Bryce Bolton at one point did replace Poncho for the green team. I think Pickard might have been the whole game. If not, maybe Holden Whipple got in there for a series. To the first question, do we expect a walk-on to be the backup center?
No.
No. But I think this is I think this could play out a lot like it has in the past with other walk-ons, where like in practice he's their number two. Because he has probably been their number two in practice. But Marcus Harper, I think in a pinch, is going to be their second center. Like if Poncho doesn't work out as a center, like it just doesn't play out right this year, I think Harper would be your starting center. Or if Poncho gets hurt, knock on wood, I think you'd elevate Harper. And that was kind of the situation they had a couple of years ago with Ryan Walk, where he was your left guard. But when Forsythe went down, okay, we'll turn to him and then we'll bring in Jackson Powers Johnson or whatnot. And they kind of reshuffled the deck. I kind of think that's what this is, where they've got another starter on the line there who would probably fill in at center if needed. But Pickard's kind of like your number two full-time center guy. So that's how I read that. And then just like not to go full down the Charlie Pickard rabbit hole, but the question about scholarship. And this guy did have like half a dozen Division I scholarship offers coming out of high school. This is an all-state player from Jesuit in the 2021 class. Air Force offered him, Eastern Washington, Idaho offered him, Dartmouth offered him. I could pull up his whole list here and there's more. So, I don't know if he's ever going to be a scholarship guy at Oregon, but this was certainly a guy who, when they added him, I remember thinking like, oh, this is like not just your average run-of-the-mill in-state walk-on. This is a guy who could have easily gone and played Division I football with a scholarship somewhere. So keep that in mind with Charlie. I think he's certainly in that preferred walk-on role, right? He's like one of the guys they actively recruit. He didn't just try out and make the team. So I think Charlie is probably better than your average run-of-the-mill walk-on, but I don't think he's going to be a scholarship player unless, shoot, who knows? Maybe he'll be thrust into action this season and play really well and earn it. But that's kind of my Charlie Pickard spiel. I don't know. Matt, do you have anything else there?
I mean, I think if anything happens, they're probably going to go – and if something happens at this position group and they feel like, hey, we can't risk Marcus Harper being the backup center full time because we want to focus on just at guard, they probably would go portal unless they feel like David Yuli can play the center position and play it well as a backup behind Poncho. But the reality is, I think Poncho will be your starter. Marcus Harper will be the emergency backup. Charlie Pinkard will probably take your second team reps, just in the event that he's the third guy to play that center position. And if that doesn't work out, well, guess what? You've got huge problems. And
if you're third center, you already got problems, guys.
Yes, yes. You are at bigger problems that you really can't foresee and build out and be ready for. So at that point, it is what it is. Bad luck, injuries, or something happened, and it's unfortunate, but you just have to roll with it. So, like, I Poncho's played one bowl game and has played one spring game at the center position. And it's something that he even talked about, like, he didn't think was going to happen when he signed with Oregon. He loves the position. He loves playing it. He's on board playing it. But it was not something that was in his realm of possibilities when he signed that, hey, I should probably start practicing this because they told me that I'm probably going to be playing a little bit of center down the road. Like, no. So let's see what he looks like after a summer where he takes probably a million snaps in practice to get himself ready.
I'll throw one more name out just because he's not here yet. But I know Devin Brooks is a guy they're really high on.
Yes.
Who's a true freshman. I don't think
he probably will be ahead of Pinkard by the end of the year.
I mean, that's what I'm kind of saying. Like, it's maybe because, I mean, think about it. Poncho came in as a true freshman last year, and by the end of the year was your backup center. Maybe Brooks is good enough that he comes in and pushes his way up to the depth chart, and maybe by the end of the year that's the case too. So they probably have more options than maybe we think. But, I mean, I wanted to give credit to Charlie because he's been kind of this like number two-ish role for, you know, the last couple of years here in practice. So it's a guy whose name you probably could know. I don't know how much he'll end up playing because I think there's going to be enough reserves to get in there. And maybe Bryce Bolton's a guy who like we're kind of sleeping on who makes a step. And he's somebody who does, I know the staff was high on his athleticism. It was definitely in that Justice Lowe, Solomon Davis, kind of the bottom end of the recruiting class from a ranking perspective, at least, but really athletic, very undersized, but maybe he can be a player down the road too at center. All right. Fifth one from at Duck Greatness with the number for eight. With the success of the spring game and end of spring ball, could we be expecting more commitments from the 2025 class now that the staff shifts their focus to recruiting? Hashtag Ots and Audibles. Well, Matt, Dan says they're always focused on recruiting. To answer your question that he asked you.
Yes. I asked if, kind of hoping to get him to talk a little bit about, this is going to be a couple big months, but he said we're always recruiting. Which is
sure, that's true.
Yes, we knew that. That was 100%. But yes, the spring game had some visitors, multiple five stars, a lot of four star prospects on campus. For that, we've got the visitor list. I actually got a couple late messages last night from some recruits for some stories that will go up on duckterritory.com today, tomorrow, and the rest of the week. So that's positive news, but I would anticipate here it's evaluation period, meaning Oregon's coaching staff can go out on the road, make stops at schools, watch players work out. That will be the case all the way through the month of May, pretty much. And then the month of June turns into camp season where coaches go across the country and do satellite camps, landing, and probably most of the coaching staff will be up on June 1st in the state of Oregon at a football camp up in the Portland, Oregon area. Multiple coaches are going up on June 2nd to Tacoma for another football camp up in that area. So it would not surprise me if by the end of June we see Oregon's commit list double. I think that's a very fair expectation. Official visitors are going to start coming in as well late May and then throughout the month of June as well. So the spring game had guys who will be taking visits to Oregon in a month or two on campus. And Oregon's commitment should grow. And Lanning, I think a couple weeks ago, talked about how like they've shifted their focus for a lot of their official visits being in May, June, and then also in March. I think that's by design, and that's going to set up guys to committing before their senior season start. I mean, I thought it was interesting how Dante Moore spoke after the spring game. He was like, yeah, I've never actually seen Autzen Stadium in a game day environment because I took my official visit before the season started, and I didn't get to see the games. And that's the case now. And so a lot of these guys are going to be rolling in, and it's fair to assume that commitments should happen. So yeah, they should be in that double digit range in about a month and a half, 2 months.
Just quickly on the visit thing. It's so weird because when I first started doing this and even before I was professionally doing this and just kind of following Oregon football and football recruiting, the big thing for Oregon was always get them on campus for a game day experience. We're going to blow them away because Autzen is special. They're going to see the fans. This is the best environment on the West Coast. Yada, yada, yada. And now to your point, Matt, like it's possible you sign a recruiting class where a lot of these guys didn't, the high majority of these guys didn't ever take a game in at Autzen unless they're relatively local and they could drive down or drive up or, hop on a short flight for a weekend or their parents have the financial ability to let them do that. So it is a different world now with the way recruiting works and the timing of it is different, but Oregon obviously knows the middle of the year here, the weather's a little bit better. They have all the time in the world to focus their attention on making it a special visit. They can bring in a bunch of guys together, show off all their digs and everything and have success. And they've had a lot of success, obviously, under Dan Lanning using this strategy, but it is different, and he even talked about it, I forget when, but earlier, in spring, sometime in April about, we'll host some visits in fall, but they want to do like the lion's share of the work before the season even gets started so that they can be pretty much all things football until they get, right around the early signing period in December.
Yeah, that's a good point. How basically September was a huge month from a recruiting perspective, 2009. Yeah. And then the 3 weeks after the regular season was over was all the craziness happened for official visits and surprise visits and surprise commitments and flips and all of that. And now in today's day and age, like even the traditional signing day in mid-December now, or not the traditional one, but the early signing day in like mid-December, even that now at this point, there's nowhere near as many surprises on that day because most kids have committed already and they've signed. And that's a question we need to ask Dan, is that like, hey, this is before your time at Oregon, but 20 years ago, 10, 15 years ago.
Wow, 20 years, but you're right, yeah.
Like, it used to be Oregon's biggest selling pitch was the game day atmosphere. And now you said, like, you like to have your guys on campus for official visits in May and June. What has led to that huge transitional shift? That's a good question that we should ask him.
Well, we're supposed to get him on the podcast at some point, I think. Yeah.
Yes, we are at some point. Okay. Hopefully that comes through. We'll see.
All right. Last one here from @babyduck7873. And I modified this a little bit because she asked a question about the scholarship number, but I wanted to just focus on this. So the question, the way I've worded it, I apologize for doctoring the result, but will we still have some players leave to meet the scholarship numbers?
They have to.
The answer is they have to. Matt, is it 86 or 87? I've seen both numbers.
I believe it's 86.
Okay.
I want to run through it one more time. I'm going to have something up on the site this week about it, but I believe it's 86. But what makes it difficult is figuring out the guys that are scholarship players and the guys that are NIL scholarship players. And that's not the correct term, but basically what happens, and this isn't only at Oregon. A lot of schools do this. They offer guys, this is now happening at the high school level. And I know this for a fact with even multiple Oregon kids, but guys get offers by Oregon, but they're not the traditional, air quotes for non-video watchers, scholarship offers. They are given an NIL package that's basically the equivalent or a little bit more of the equivalent of what the value of the Oregon scholarship would be to cover all your room and board. And so that's kind of making things a little bit harder to decipher what the true number is. But the reality is, they're no more than 87, and they're probably an 86. So they need to lose one to two guys on scholarship. And about 4 weeks ago, we looked at this, 6 weeks ago, and we're like, it's going to kind of get hard to get down to this number, but they're basically there, just like it was last season when I think Jared said they were like 10 or 11 guys over on like February 1st, and somehow they got down to below that number.
Yeah, no, I just think in general we don't stress about that, you know, and so one or two, assuming that they don't add anybody, but there's also, I think, a high probability that they do add at least a couple players. I mean, shoot, Dan on the spring game was asked about the depth as receivers, and he was like, yeah, we're always looking for more playmakers, kind of like even suggesting to those listening, like, yeah, if you're in the portal and you're a receiver, come on out. So I don't know how many they'll add, but, you know, it's one to two if they don't add anybody. And then, of course, if they do add X number of players, you have to have X, you know, same number of players to take off. And, you know, the other part here, and again, there's so much murkiness around this, and we really haven't touched on the podcast, but the Dalen Austin thing might solve some of this for them, because that is a scholarship player. And if the end result is something, you know, he has, you know, we don't want to speculate too much here, but let's just say he doesn't end up being on this year's team or in the future. Now you're actually at 85 or at 86 as opposed to being at 86 or 87. So I it's nowhere near as dire as I think people had thought it would be. And the other part is, I want to be really careful with how I frame this. You know, Johnny Bones and Cody DeCamber, the two players you lost, I think you feel pretty decent if those are the kind of guys that are leaving. Mm-hmm. And I think you'd assume those would be the kind of guys that would probably be leaving this time as well, if, you know, to get down to 85. So there's some really talented players on this team. It's possible a couple of them just look around after spring and say, man, I don't know if I'm going to have the playing time I want. Let's go to this other school where I could maybe start. But I also think it's pretty likely that you end up seeing a couple of maybe second year, third year guys in the program who just are, you know, grappling to see any field time. I don't know if Cody DeCamber or Johnny Bones were going to crack the rotation. DeCamber in particular, I was just kind of like, safety is a position where they've got multiple guys that I like a lot better than him. So, you know, in terms of who is going to depart, because I know that's the popular question, I don't want to throw any names out, but I would just assume probably that those names are going to be more like the DeCamber Bowens group, or they're going to be guys that, hey, you think pretty highly of, but they're not starters, and maybe they're not even second team guys that just want to play a little bit more.
Yeah, 100%. Like, they just – the reality is at some point you get to a number where anyone below this number, you're just not going to play.
Yep.
Because you can't play everybody. And the reality is you're not good enough yet. And – for Bowens and for DeCambra, they were below that number. They were not going to be guys that, if everyone was healthy and available to play, we're going to see major snaps in 2024. And they elected to leave to find other playing time. And that's within their right. And that's totally fine. Doesn't mean they're bad players either. Or, like we talked about it post spring, like the talent level at Oregon has continued to rise. The depth has gotten deeper. It's harder and harder every single year under Mario Cristobal and now under Dan Lanning to find playing time, because the margin between each player is getting smaller and the talent is going up. And for DeCambra and Bowens, they weren't going to play this year. And frankly, they probably weren't going to play a lot the following year either, based upon who was here, who's coming, and who's returning. And now it's, you know, they got to find one more, maybe two more guys to get below. And, you know, what happens with the portal the rest of the way will probably decide how many guys truly need to get off this roster to get under 85. Because if they feel really good and they don't need to, and they don't feel like they need to add anybody, then it's one player. And to your point, like, the Dalen Austin thing might be how they get under there. And if they need more than one player, if they add a player in the portal, then it comes a one for one type instance. You add a player, you got to have someone leave. And from a numbers perspective, it's going to get all worked out. And there should be zero doubt that it doesn't.
Escope would like to add one final question.
Okay,
to the show.
Go ahead.
If they are to add, coming out of spring now, we've kind of had an opportunity to digest what they have. I feel like interior defensive line, interior offensive line would be the two places I would be looking at if I were to be looking. Do you agree, or are there other spots that you're kind of like, maybe they need another tight end, maybe they need another linebacker?
Maybe safety.
Maybe safety. Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't know. I think tight end will be fine. I think linebacker will be fine.
Yeah.
They obviously don't need one at quarterback. I don't think they need one at running back. Whittington and Jordan James can be your 1-2 punch. And then Lamar fits perfectly with what the rest of the position group looks like. I know maybe he's not the most talented player, but he's a different – I think the thing about running back is they're all different. They're all entirely different players.
Yeah.
And they all fit collectively good. So you don't need a running back. You certainly don't need a receiver. Edge players seem fine. Linebacker,
a ton of edge guys, and they're all really young.
Yes, so really, it's interior and offense and defensive line, and maybe a safety. I don't think corner is needed either.
No, they've got a lot of corners, and we should, just because you glossed over, Jay Harris is also in the running back room, and I think very much his addition even makes it even less necessary to take a running back. So, yeah, I think there's maybe. And we may have looked so silly for saying this, but I think at most three players they add is my guess.
We'll see. I agree. We'll see. All right. That's going to do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Thank you for sending in your questions for the mailbag. We'll be doing these more on a regular basis. Thank you for doing that. And again, we'll do it again soon. But until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks. And aloha.